Hello everybody and welcome to episode 295 of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast for the week of Wednesday, June 15th, 2016. I am your host, Mark Huzhnez, and before I talk about anything else, I do want to touch on the horrible, horrible, horrible thing that happened in Orlando. We can all agree that it was horrible, and if we don't agree on that, then I would kindly ask you, who thinks it was perfectly fine or doesn't really care, to stop listening, never listen to the show again, and just get out of my figurative face. But I don't want to talk too much about it, just because we've all heard a lot about it. I mean, it's been in the news every day since, and it can be overwhelming, and there's nothing I can say that hasn't already been said, and in this time, it's better to not be so, it's better to not just let it suck the life out of us and to just keep going on, even though in ways that feels horrible in its own right, just to kind of like, I keep on keeping on despite what has happened. I'm not, to not let it make you into, into a shell of what you were before, and especially goes to people in the LGBT community, the people in the Latino community who were directly impacted by that. But it's just a horrible thing, and it was especially worrisome for me because I have multiple friends who live in Orlando, but I have one specifically who, she is a bartender, and I couldn't remember where she worked, so there was a time when I was very concerned about that. I did see for the first time, and I guess it's a nice feature. It could, of course, there's the accuracy of it could be anyone logging into the account, but the nice thing about Facebook is having this little thing where somebody who lives in an area where something like this has happened can check in as safe. So that was like one of the few nice things about Facebook. But I won't talk anymore about what happened. It's horrible how many people lost their life and everything. And I posted to Facebook on the day that it happened a little something that I think it's important to remember in times like this. And I'm just going to read that here. It's very brief. What happened in Orlando today is horrible, beyond horrible. And whatever the reason is that it happened, I think it's important to not waste time hating the one who did this terrible act, but to, instead, take this time to send all our love to the victims and their families who need all they can get right now. And I think that is important to remember, to not focus on the one who committed the crime and to put all your energy to those who were affected by the crime, whether it's the direct victims, the families, friends, etc. And for the least I can do, and this will be the last thing I say, is just that all sales of my art on imprint, which you can find a link, it's in the store at the top of the site, or if you go to what is the URL? And it's in print without the second I, so INPRNT. And my link is imprint.com/gallery/PX sausage. So you can go there, you can get a link on the site, Pixelated Sausage. And all sales from the month of June, during the month of June, will be going directly to the One Orlando Fund. So, and then that's all sales. I'm not starting now. I'm retroactively. So any print sold there, I will at the end of the month when I get the funds from that, I will donate all of them to the One Orlando Fund. So yes, now I will move on. Which just feels weird to be like, I just talked about the sad thing. Let's move on to something more but I'll just move on. So I watched a movie I've been meaning to watch for a while now. not the Ninja Turtles movie, because I still haven't gotten around to it, because every time I do think about going and I'm like, okay, this is a perfect time, I then forget until I'm about to leave and I double check, oh wait, this is the 3D showing, and I in no way want to see it in 3D because it'll just be horrible. I don't like 3D. But I saw this movie, Predestination, with Ethan Hawke, and I don't know who the actress is in it, but it's a time travel movie, so it, I mean, I'm sure there are flaws in the whole time travel aspect to it, because I don't think there's any way to perfectly, I mean, time travel in itself is just like this imperfect thing that will never ever make sense because of all the paradoxes that come with it. But I thought it was really, really well done. And comparing it to other time travel movies, I feel like, and maybe I'm just not remembering other time travel movies that well, but I feel like it's a much more focused story and much more personal and isn't as grand as other stories, which I liked. And I think all the actors did a really well job. And I don't want to talk too much about it because, one, I think it's a movie you don't want to be spoiled on it. Two, you will immediately want to watch it again because you want to try and figure things out. And what I will say, and this will be a very brief spoiler because it kind of can, if you just have this idea in your head, it can maybe not ruin the movie, but it'll get you thinking already in that first viewing. So skip ahead a minute if you do not want any spoilers at all. Okay, starting now. Ethan Hawke in the movie, at one point, he's working as a bartender while also being his little time travel cop guy. And he, when talking to this other character, he tells them a joke. He says he doesn't know any jokes, and then he says he only knows one, but it's not funny. And what he says is, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And the person replies, the rooster. And he's like, see, you already knew it, and I told you it wasn't funny. But that is basically what the time travel in Predestination is all about. What came first, the chicken or the egg? And then, of course, it's the rooster. It's like, and it's that kind of concept that is throughout the movie, and I kind of got that throughout the movie, and then when how everything ended, I was like, oh, and then when I finished it and just was reflecting on it, I was like, oh man, this is really interesting. And I think, you know, as far as time travel movies goes, it does a really good job at having it all kind of make as much sense as it possibly can. And it was shot well. It has a bit of a noir feel, so almost like a Dark City in a way. But I really, really liked it. And I know it was critically acclaimed, so I would definitely recommend checking that out. You can get it at Best Buy right now with another movie. It's like a buy one, get one free. So get two movies for $10. And they have a decent selection in there. You get Predestination, and there was something else I was looking at that I was like, oh, I can get Predestination. I should probably watch it before I buy it. And something else. Something I really wanted. I don't know. But I highly recommend checking out Predestination because it was a really well-done movie. And I'm a huge fan of Ethan Hawke. I think he's underrated, underappreciated. He's also in my favorite movie franchise, the Before franchise. But definitely check that out. And yeah, there you go. Perfect. Two great movies that you should pick up at Best Buy for $10 together. Whiplash and Predestination. Boom. You're set, because Whiplash is great now. Though I would be so much more terrified of J.K. Simmons' character in Whiplash if he looked like he does now, because I saw a picture of him, and I guess he's doing it for the new, is it a Justice League? Whatever the next Batman movie is or whatever. He is super jacked, and if he looked like that and was also this incredibly angry, volatile, abusive teacher like he is in Whiplash, it'd be like, oh, he's gonna kill all of his students at some point. But yeah, Predestination, great movie. Whiplash, great movie. Definitely check them both out right there. But Predestination, super surprising, nice little indie flick, and handled really well. Super interesting. I was surprised because a lot of it was this very personal story, and it was like, what does any of this have to do, or like, why am I hearing so much of this personal story in this time? I thought it was bigger than this, but no, it's just very, very well done, and I highly recommend it. Try not to go into it knowing that much, as I haven't told you that much, but predestination. I don't know how many times I've said predestination, but maybe if I go back in the time, I can, you know, cancel all those predestinations out. Or I could just edit it and be like, ooh, it was time travel, but it was just editing, which is a form of time travel, right? No. Okay. Let's just get on to the rest of the show. So, I've been watching a good amount of anime. I've been watching a really good amount. And I've watched three new series that I'll talk about. I'll start with what I'm currently watching. And I'm just over halfway through. I've watched 13 episodes of Steins Gate. And any anime fan surely knows what Steins Gate is. Probably has already seen it. I've been putting it off for a while just because I've heard it's very heavy. It's very emotional. Like, I hear a lot of people crying about it. And when I started it, I'm going to have some controversial thoughts about this, too. This may be one of the most controversial thoughts I've ever had on a show. But I really, really wasn't feeling Steins Gate. And even now, 13 episodes in, I'm still not loving it. I do think it's getting more interesting since they are starting to really mess around with the manipulation of time and whether or not you can change things and what little changes can do to the entire, you know, world, or just specifically in the city where they are and all that. But it starts off really, really, really slowly. Let me give you the synopsis before I talk any more about it. This is from my anime list. The self-proclaimed mad scientist Rintaro Akabe rents out a room in a rickety old building in Akihabara. I'll tell you, when I don't say someone's name beforehand, I always screw it up and take time. Look at this. This is a horrible way to talk about the show. I don't know, I'm not even going to read the synopsis for this. It all has to do around time travel and whether, not so much time travel, but sort of like sending messages back in time. And then it gets bigger and bigger as it's going on. And this one guy, Rintaro, he is the only one who's not entirely affected by it. He can remember the previous version of the world before the changes that happen. And some of the other people kind of they understand that things are going on, but they're not as aware as he is. And things are starting to get crazier and crazier. And the last episode was definitely one of the better ones. But what I don't like about the show is that it took a really long time to get going. And when I looked on my anime list at a forum post, a thread, that was asking why is it so popular, because it's a very, it's ranked to number 3 on my anime list, and its popularity number 8. So it is a very popular and highly acclaimed show. It's got a 9.17. I currently have it at a 6, which is fine. But a lot of people say, hey, you know, give it 9 or 11 episodes and then it really gets going. And that's kind of true. But at the same time, no one should have to give any series 9 or 11 episodes to truly get invested. But that is definitely the case here. It's sort of like Dollhouse in that sense, where Dollhouse was not good, and then it got really, really good. But I would never tell anyone they should really sit through this not-so-great content to reach this pretty damn good content. But I am interested in watching more. The biggest problem with the show, though, is that it has one of the most annoying characters ever. But spoilers, she just died in this last episode, which is why it was very good. But this last episode, you know, spoilers, it was very good because he kept trying, Rentaro kept trying to prevent her death, and then he would change this thing, but she would still end up dying in a different way. And then he thought he prevented it at the very end, but then this complete accident happened and she ended up dying. So it's playing around with that in that last episode, whether or not you can really truly change anything, or if things are just meant to happen, which I find very interesting, especially after, you know, I talked about predestination, just watching that, moving on to the series is quite fitting. But that character, I believe her name is Mayuri, she is so freaking annoying because she has her little catchphrase that she says all the freaking time. I hope she stays dead because I can't stand hearing toot-a-roo, toot-a-roo, toot-a-roo. She says it way too much. I mean, saying it more than once is already way too much because it's just annoying. It means it doesn't have any purpose. And she as a character doesn't have much of a purpose. She's just annoying, and I hope she stays dead because I can't take any more toot-a-roo, toot-a-roo. I'll say toot-a-roo in happy joyfulness at her death. But Steins Gate so far is just kind of okay. It might become amazing in the end when everything is wrapped up, but even still, I would never rate this a. I don't think there's any way I could ever possibly rate this above an 8 when all is said and done. If it really just is like super great from now until the end, because I can't forgive a start like that. In the same way that Madoka Magica, I can't forgive the fact that I think the majority of that show isn't that good, and I also don't like Madoka. I don't like her as a character, but Homura is amazing. And the last two episodes are friggin' brilliant, and they don't want to say they make up for the first part of that series, but they kind of make sense of it all and kind of give a reason for why all the stuff that happens and why everything that was going on in those first 10 episodes did happen, which could be the case of Steins Gate with the first half. But yeah, that's Steins Gate. I also watched Princess Jellyfish, Kurage Hime, and this is a show I watched the first two episodes of a long time ago when they were on Netflix, and then I was like, I don't like the way Netflix handles anime and subtitles and all this, and then I decided to watch it again because I found it was on Funimation, and I really did like it quite a bit. I didn't love it, but I really enjoy the art of it. It's very pretty. It has a distinct style to it. It is a very, very, very good adaptation of the manga art, because the manga art is actually really, really nice too. And it just looks like it's been taken off the page and put onto the screen, which isn't always the case. Sometimes because the manga art isn't that great. Like I just started reading the manga that was the inspiration for the that. Guide to Kawaii Hostile Complex Behavior thing. I can never remember the title. But I started reading that, and I'm like, wow, this art's not that great. And I really want to watch the series again, but Princess Jellyfish is really pretty. I will actually give the synopsis for this one from my anime list. Kurashita Tsukume Kusukimi loves jellyfish to the point of obsession, which is why she can't bear to see a jellyfish being mistreated in a local pet store. When the social awkward Tsukimi fails to speak up for the jellyfish, a beautiful woman steps in, sparking the beginning of an extremely unlikely friendship. Tsukimi and her nerdy friends, who are also her roommates, are swept off their feet by this newcomer in their lives. She's everything they're not, effortlessly stylish, incredibly confident, and a part of a social circle the girls only dream of joining. She might also not be quite what she seems to be. Whenever I read these synopses, I kind of also think, who wrote these? These are not completely accurate. Let me just finish it though. With the help of her new friend, Tsukimi becomes confident enough to take on the world, protect her home from destruction, and attempt to achieve her lifelong dream of becoming a designer. This little Kuragahime is on her way to becoming a queen. So, that's not entirely true, They don't mention, then this happens in the first episode, so it's not a spoiler. This beautiful woman you find out is actually a boy who likes to dress up as a girl just because, and it seems like he only likes to do it because, one, because of his mother, and I don't know if it's like his connection with his mother, but also so he doesn't have to deal with any of the political stuff of his family because he's from a very well-off political family. But these girls that he barges in on all the time, they don't invite him ever until the end when he's trying to help them not have their home taken away. They don't like it. They don't like those people. They don't like the stylish. They're afraid of the stylish. They don't want to be like the stylish. They like being who they are, and they don't want to have anything. You know, they're all otakus, and they don't want to. They also don't like being called that, or specifically don't like being called neats. But they're not filled with a burning desire to become the stylish and this confident group of people and become super socially acceptable or whatever. So I think that's a weird thing to say. And Tsukimi in particular is like really, really shy and, you know, nervous around him and is full of social anxiety and isn't like asking him to help her or anything. He just was like barging in and not messing with them. He has a good heart for the most part, but yeah, he's an unwelcomed guest, and I think that thing is all weird. But I thought it was a really well done little story. It feels like there could be more to it, so I'm interested in where the manga goes because I'm not sure if this is an adaptation of the whole thing. But I enjoyed it. I kind of wanted more because it felt like in the end, it's like, oh, this is just the beginning of where these relationships could possibly be going. You finally get some growth because Tsukimi, for the majority, is very standstill, and she only shows growth in the later episodes. She does at times show this incredible amount of confidence when talking about jellyfish and all that. And the reason why she loves jellyfish is because of her mother and this strong relationship she had with her mother who passed away from illness. And she told her, you know, at one time you'll get a dress that's like a jellyfish for a princess and all this stuff. But it's a nice story about friendship and growth in a way. The one thing that kind of bothered me is that there's this side story with the one character, the I guess I'll just call him a drag queen, but I'll call him the cross dresser's brother, where he is dealing with this woman who is sort of working for the people trying to buy out all these homes so they can tear them down and then build up high rises or, you know, like condos or stuff like that, and she drugs him and then takes pictures of her with him, like in her underwear and him without in his underwear, and then starts to frame him and make him think like they had sex and all this stuff. And I thought that was really, it made me uncomfortable because it's a horrible thing she did, and I don't think they treated her as enough of a monster as she should be. And then she kind of like starts getting redeemed at the end when she finds out, like, oh, this guy's actually a nice guy, because she typically does it to not so great people. But she's like, wait, this guy's an actual nice guy, and he's trying to keep doing the right thing, and he's like showing a degree of care for her, like when she is drunk or whatever. And then she also fakes taking pills when he comes over as like a joke, and then he slaps her, and it's like, what are you doing? This isn't funny. I was concerned about you. And it's like, that kind of really snaps her out of it, and it's like, wait, what am I doing and with my life? And I appreciate that she's like starting to come around, but I still think like she should face some kind of consequence for what she did. And like, maybe she admits what she did later on in the manga, but you know, the series was from 2010, so there hasn't been anything after that, and I don't think there will be past that. But Princess Jellyfish is a solid series. It's a quick watch. It's only 11 episodes, so check it out if you want something that's a bit slice of lifey. Has a nice, unique art style, I'll say, And it's a nice little sweet story. It can sometimes get annoying with just how, especially, what the hell's her name again? Tsukimi is, like, so off-put by the cross-dresser, whose name I don't even care about, really, at this point. But she could, like, it just be a bit, like, super crazy where she'll, like, want to jump out a window instead of dealing with him. And then the last show I watched is Okami-san to Shichinin no Nakami Tachi, otherwise known as Okami-san and her seven companions. And this is very kind of slice of lifey about fairy tales and stuff, and doesn't really go anywhere, but is kind of cute and funny and sweet and silly, and I like that. I really like the art, and it's just about this character, Okami Ryoku, who is, I think she is this world's representation of the big bad wolf, you know. And they have like Alice from Alice in Wonderland, they have Little Red Riding Hood, and all these characters who are just kind of like, oh, slight parodies of themselves. But it almost reminds me of Maria in the Phantom World from last season, where there isn't really this overarching story, but you have these little individual stories each episode, and a cast of characters that are, you know, pretty enjoyable, that you all like. I don't think there's any character from the show I didn't like. And you just get to enjoy them interacting with each other, and a little bit of personal growth between each other, you know, relationships growing tighter and tighter as it goes on. And I'm sad there hasn't been any more of the series. I really wish there was, but I don't think there ever will be. But it's very, very pretty, I think. And I really enjoyed it. It's 12 episodes. Don't really need to say much about it. It's just like, if you want something that is visually very pretty, is fun and silly, can play with itself and all that, then I definitely recommend checking out Okami-san. I don't have that much to say about E3 because I only ended up watching the Microsoft and Sony press conferences. I didn't watch Treehouse. I waited to see if the Pokemon 3DS came back in stock in the States. You know, if that was part of the announcement. That didn't happen. I don't care about Link. I don't care about Nintendo. Whatever. But just based on what I've heard about the other conferences, what was announced, and watching the Sony and Microsoft conference, I left kind of not feeling too excited about anything, really. I think a big part of why nothing was that exciting was because there were quite a few leaks. I think Dead Rising 4 would have been huge, for me at least, if it wasn't leaked, and so much of it was leaked, a lot of footage. I think both the Microsoft and Sony conferences were fine. Sony is probably better, but they're very different in what they were trying to do. Microsoft was very much more so talking about user experience and trying to like give the most out of that, which is why they kept talking about, you know, you buy it on Xbox One, you buy it on PC, you get both versions of it. Of course, if you buy digitally, not physical. So that was a big thing for them. Everything was always like, own it on Xbox One and Windows 10 and cross play between platforms, which is nice. And, you know, introducing the Xbox One S at the beginning of the show, which is a slimmer version of the Xbox One, which is slightly more powerful and allows for 4K video and I think something else. But I don't care about that. I'm much more interested in the Scorpio, which they ended with. And I think if those weren't leaked beforehand, that would have been pretty big. Though at the same time, I don't know if they would have talked about them if they weren't leaked. Because, you know, Scorpio in particular is quite a ways off. It's not coming out till holiday 2017. But I'm depending on the price, I would get a Scorpio, but I am someone who's firmly, I believe it should be $399, and a lot of people know it would be $499 minimum, probably because of how powerful it is. But I, the way I look at it is, you look at how powerful the PS4 was when it came out in 2013 at this point. That was $399. This is going to be 4 years since then. Technology has changed. You know what? Things are going to get more powerful and things should be cheaper. And that's how much they should charge for it. They shouldn't charge more than that, especially if they want us to be on a 4 year cycle. And maybe they might even shorten it after that going forward. I think $399 is a good price. It's a good middle ground. $500, it starts getting like, well, should I? I don't know about all this. So yeah, I think $399 is where it should be when it comes out. But onto the games of E3 that really got me going. Let me think. EA did nothing. Like, I'm trying to think about the conferences I didn't watch, if there's anything that I heard or saw that really stood out to me. No, I mean, I didn't watch any of Zelda, but I've been hearing nothing but great things. My co-host friend Rob is like losing his mind over it. But for Microsoft, Gears of War looks like Gears of War could be good. Will be good. I shouldn't say it could be good. Watching the demo made me think, you know what? I am more interested in Gears of War than Halo. So I'm excited to play this. I'm not in any rush to play it, or like I'm not dying to play it, but it looks very pretty, and I am looking forward to playing it more than, you know, Halo 5 did for me or anything. Forza Horizon 3, that is my jam. That is one of my games of the show. Looks super, super pretty. I love that they're going to Australia. I just can't wait to play it. I want to play it right now because I love Forza Horizon, and I just want to play more of it. I want to play it in a new environment. I want to start all over and upgrade my cars and my level and all that. I just want to go crazy in it. I know Hotcakes Man is probably super excited about that, but can't wait for that to come out. What else was at Microsoft? Like, I'm trying to remember what was there. And like, Dead Rising 4, I'm definitely super excited for. I love the trailer. I thought that, like I said earlier, it would have been really great if it wasn't already leaked. And then State of Decay 2, can't wait for that. Man, oh man. It's funny because I don't really have any affinity for zombies, but God, I love State of Decay, and I love the Dead Rising franchise, so I just can't wait for those to come back. I thought ReCore looked not good. There were a lot of people who were into it and were mentioning the game that I've heard people mention before, but I never ended up playing. I never played. I think it was Jet Force Gemini or whatever. It visually didn't look that interesting, and mechanically, it looked like I didn't understand what the hell was going on, really. So I think it's a game that maybe you have to play it to get it. But like from the little gameplay trailer they showed, I was just like, whatever. Then they showed a bunch of indies, and you know, those are, sure, I can't wait to play some of them, but whatever. They don't spend that much time on them. They just show a montage. They did show We Happy Few, which I think it could be a very interesting game, and I want to play it, but I think it's a weird game to have on as part of the Xbox One preview program. I think any game like that is weird in early access because it seems to be a much more of a narrative-based game, and I think something like that is weird to have in early access because if I was playing it and it was a narrative and I played a good chunk of it, I would not want to keep replaying the same narrative. And when it finally was finished, I'd be like, well, I already played most of it, if not all of it, when it was, you know, being worked on, so I'm not going to play it again. So I think that's kind of weird. I think early access makes much more sense for things like, you know, Ark, Survival Evolved, or, you know, something like Minecraft, something where it's more of a open world or something that really is about replaying it over and over again and stuff like that. But yeah, it's funny. I'm thinking about the Microsoft conference, and I'm like, I do not remember many games that were there. This is crazy. It's like, what else was there? There's like nothing there, right? Am I wrong? I can't think of anything. This is crazy. Man, it's making me think less of the Microsoft press conference now. What the hell else could they have had there, though? What could they have had other than Forza? There's no, oh yeah, Halo Wars 2. I don't care about that. Yeah, whatever. Let's just move on to Sony. Get this crap over with. Sony was very games heavy. I will say right off the bat, it was pretty good for the most part, but there was a very weird part where the momentum was kind of killed, and it seems like Sony always does this with something where they just kind of kill momentum, and they can and usually get it back, but this year it was in like the last third or maybe quarter of their conference, they showed a trailer. They started with music. I'm like, oh, there's gonna be something new Star Wars related, and then they just show like a trailer, maybe a little bit of gameplay for Star Wars, Lego Star Wars, The Force Awakens. I'm like, why the hell was that here? Why are you showing us that? That is weird, and now I just feel weird myself. But they start off with a trailer for a game. I can't remember what it was, but it was the big, like Sony Bend, I think that studio or whatever that's been, talked about but never seen for like years now, and it sort of looks like it could be like Last of Us and State of Decay mixture, and it did not look interesting at all to me. And in the demo, it just looked like, oh my god, these zombies just keep coming, and he's got unlimited ammunition, and it doesn't look fun, and whatever. Maybe it could be good, but this doesn't do anything for me. They had a gameplay for the new God of War game, which looked like The Last of Us with a God of War skin, which was weird. I like the fact that they're doing something new and different, but at the same time, it looks very much like The Last of Us, and I realized watching that I don't really care because I don't have any great love for the God of War franchise and Kratos, even though they kind of joke about him being this jerk character and that maybe he won't be so much of a jerk in this one. But at the same time, I'm just like, I don't know if I care enough. They had Horizon Zero Dawn, and that is probably my game of the show because that just looked amazing. It's super great to see something new and different from Guerrilla Games, the studio who has done nothing but Killzone games after their first game, which I believe was Shell Shock NAMM 67, which was a lot like Fable Games, where it had a lot of promise and I think wanted to do a lot more than it ended up doing in the end. But seeing them do something so colorful and with more personality, and just it looks super, super polished where it's at, and the fact that it was delayed, I think it has the potential to be an amazing game, and I think it could be Guerrilla Games' breakout game because the Killzone franchise has never been that great. It's been more of a, oh, these look pretty when they're released, but they're not that great. They do some interesting things with multiplayer, but they don't play well enough to keep a large enough a group of people playing. But Horizon Zero Dawn looked amazing, and I just cannot wait to play that. They had, oh yeah, I just remembered at the Microsoft conference, they had a horrible demo for Final Fantasy 15 where it kind of looked pretty, but that it just like was like whatever. But then back to Sony, they had a little brief trailer for The Last Guardian, and the trailer just once again reminded me that, well, this is so clearly a PS3 game. It does not look like a PS4 game at all. This better be $40, or it's a joke. It's ridiculous. I would not pay $60 for that at all. I don't even want to really pay anything for it at all because I'm kind of just annoyed at having been someone who's like, I'm buying my PS3 for Metal Gear Solid 4 and whatever the next Team Eco game is. And then it never came out, and I was like, great, because I hated Metal Gear Solid 4 and the other game I bought the system for, and never came out. Not to say I didn't play games I loved on the system, it's just like, well, great. The games I bought it for, it's just like, yeah. What else was there? I have a horrible memory. That is the most clear thing about all this stuff. Crash Bandicoot, which is kind of the Crash Bandicoot announcement reminded me of the Conquer announcement from 2 years ago at this time, at this point, for Microsoft. It was just like, you guys love Crash Bandicoot. We've been listening all this time, so we're going to re-release the old games, so you can play those and get trophies or whatever. And he's going to be in the next Skylanders game. Yay! Nothing new, though. We're not giving you anything new. Just a bunch of old games and a cameo in this thing. So it's like, here, Project Spark, here's Conquer. What else? Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I feel like there's some other big things that I'm not remembering. I'm not remembering anything. I think that's just like showing you how much I kind of didn't care. I was surprised and saddened not to see any Persona 4 there. I guess they're just saving that for TGS. That would have been my game of the show if it was there, even though I kind of have been avoiding all footage. I didn't watch the last trailer that came out because I'm just like, I don't need to know anything about this game to know I'm going to buy it and love it. What else? I do think, what's his name, but the head of Sony, like, games or whatever, Sean something, I think he was way more comfortable seeming and did a much better job at being the kind of host of the conference overall. I think he felt much more natural and just at home, and I really liked him as the main host this year. Compared to last year, where he felt like very political and just was like kept doing that thing where it's like, I'm going to put my thumb and all my fingers together and just like point, just like jab at the audience. I'm actually going to go and Google this to see what happened, to see if there's anything in particular that I missed out. Oh yeah, for Microsoft, the potential coolest thing was they announced that you'll be able to customize your own controllers, and I thought that was super awesome. That was like one of the most exciting things about it, because I was just like, yes, I want to be able to do that, and I think it's just cool that you can now officially get that done, because you could always, you know, send it off to a modder to get it done, but getting an official controller with the look that you want is pretty cool. Spider-Man exclusive from Insomniac Games for PlayStation 4, and I think that's cool, but what saddens me is that it's an exclusive, so not everyone's going to get to play it, and I think it'll be a good game because Insomniac is making it, but then it saddens me because Insomniac is making it and not working on something original. Of course, PlayStation also had all the VR stuff, including the Resident Evil 7 trailer, which, like, one, it's in first person, two, you'll be able to fully play it in VR. Crazy. I would never do that. I'm never going to play the game because it looks like it's actually scary again. And then a whole bunch of other VR stuff. And then I guess the last big thing from there was Detroit Become Human, which is the latest Quantum Dreams game. And all I can say watching that is, like, I hope it's good. But I have no idea what to ever make of their games, because I loved Indigo Prophecy. I loved Heavy Rain until the end, and then I hated it, and I do hate it. And then I never played Beyond Two Souls, because I played the demo, and I was like, whatever. I don't care about this. But yeah. That's pretty much it. I have nothing else to say. So, other than E3, I've pretty much just been playing Far Cry 4. And I finished it. I beat the story of it. I haven't finished it. But it's a weird game because while I was playing it, I realized that I like exploring the world and just messing around there and the randomness that happens in the world. But I don't think a lot of the missions are that well designed. And I think they have too many missions that involve you getting drugged and then confusing things happen. And I'm not just talking about the Yogi and whatever the other character's name is, their missions where they literally just drug you. But there are things like you end up in a cloud of smoke and then things get all crazy. And then you lose your weapons and then you gotta go do some stealthy bits and then you get this weapon and then you can do this section and then you jump to this other area. It's like, why do I keep end up getting drugged in these stupid missions? It was not fun. I don't care about any of the characters. Both Amita and Sabal are horrible. I ended up siding with Amita just because Sabal was very, like, he's too stuck in the past and being very oppressive. But I don't like Amita either, so I'm going to go find her in the world and kill her. I did not kill what's-his-face, the main bad pagan man. I did not kill him because I'm like, why should I kill you? You're cool. But yeah, I don't know. It's a fine game. It does feel very samey. I get kind of an Oblivion feel to it because I'm like, everything in this world looks the same. It's very large, but there's not that much variety. And at a certain point, I'm just doing the same thing over and over again, like in Oblivion. It didn't feel as varied as Skyrim, or even more so with like Morrowind. But I'm enjoying myself enough, and I probably will try and clear it out and finish it completely until I move on. I really kind of want to move on to Skyrim. That was like one of the big announcements. That was one of the weirdest things. Prey 2, not there, because it's just called Prey, and now it's completely different, and almost kind of reminds me of like Chronicles of Riddick, which could be really cool. It's just like weird. Why even call it Prey at this point? If it has nothing to do with Prey, then it's like, I don't know. It's not a sequel. There's not like a super great amount of love for the first Prey game. I loved it, but I don't think a lot of people did. But I am super excited for the remastered edition of Skyrim, and I kind of want to go back and play it and finish it on 360 for no reason, since I'm just going to play it again when it comes out. But yeah, Far Cry 4, it's a thing. I'm, as you can probably tell, I'm kind of like super tired, and still the whole Orlando thing is kind of weighing on me in this time, and whatever. Let's just finish the show already. And that will do it for this here episode of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Mark Kuznets. Y'all can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Vine, everywhere. My on my list, Xbox Live, at PX Sausage. That is at PX Sausage. You can also find me on PSN at the Kush3. That is the KUSH3. The site is, of course, pixelatedsausage.com, and you can find all the art I do there, as well as this podcast and two other podcasts, one of which I am a part of. That is Pixelated Radio, which is all about video games, and Pixelated Paranormal, which is all about paranormal stuff. So if you go there, you can check out all those podcasts, and if you haven't, please do rate, review, and subscribe to the shows on iTunes. Give them 5 stars, subscribe to them all. Tell your friends about the shows, because it really does help, and it would be greatly appreciated if you did that. And of course, Rich from Pixelated Radio, I was going to say Pixelated Sausage, but he's from Pixelated Sausage and Radio. He has his own racing podcast called Sports Car Unleashed, which you can find at scunleashed.com. Not sure if it's back yet, but hopefully it'll be back soon, and hopefully his co-host will be 100% super healthy very, very soon. Other than that, I think I will just say goodbye like I usually do. I don't know if there's anything else I specifically want to talk about or say. You can always leave a comment or email the show or any of that kind of jazz by leaving a comment on this post, of course, emailing the show psp@pixelatedsausage.com, or if you're feeling super crazy, you can leave a voicemail that isn't some nuisance people just hounding me for random crap or leaving long messages with nothing in it. You can actually leave a real message, 312-772-5874. That is 312-772-KUSH, K-U-S-H, which is 5874. But yeah, that will do it for this week's show. Hope y'all are having the best week you can, given the sad circumstances that started this week. So yeah, Have a great rest of the week, everyone. Bye-bye. Do you like pixelated sausage? Do you like sausage? Do you like pixelation? Do you like it when sausage is pixelated? Do you like this podcast? Do you like pixelated radio? Do you like other things that have pixelated and sausage in the name somewhere? Do you like me? Do you like the other people who work at Pixelated Sausage? Do you like the fact that I said work, even though no one gets paid? Well, if you do like any of that stuff, you can support the site, the podcast, whatever you want, by chipping in a few bucks every month over at patreon.com/pxs. That is, once again, patreon.com/pxs. A few months, yes, a few months a buck really goes a long way, but a few bucks a month goes an even longer way.